Hello, and welcome to the Book Smarts podcast, where we talk about publishing data and technologies and send you away with some insights that will help you sell more books. I'm your host, Joshua Talent. So in this episode of the Book Smarts podcast, I'm really excited to have a conversation with Guy LaCharles Gonzalez. For those of you who don't know Guy, Guy was he's a former poet and a blogger. Reluctantly active on Twitter. He's the founding director of the Original Digital Book World, which I think is where I originally met you. Is that right, Guy?
I think so. Yeah. Not at Digital Book World, in relation to it.
Yeah. And also you worked for Writer's Digest and Library and School Library Journal and the Panorama Project, and now you're the chief content officer at Library Pass. So Welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you.
Yeah. Glad to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah. So this is actually kind of cool because, Guy made a comment on LinkedIn a couple weeks ago after listening to the first episode of the Book Smarts podcast. And he made a comment about how publishers are sometimes data driven and sometimes data informed, and the value of being data informed over data driven. And it's an interesting idea because I think a lot of times we get this. This idea that you have to be data driven, and so anyway, I wanted to bring Guy on to talk about this topic and kind of flesh it out a little bit, and hopefully give some insights to people about the difference between the two. So, Guy, how would you describe a publisher who is data informed instead of being data driven?
So my issue with data driven is it's become kind of a buzzword that's lost its original meaning. And I compare it to, the early days of GPS, where if you're not paying attention, GPS will drive you off a cliff. So, data is only as useful as the context you're pulling it into and the other insights you bring to it. Otherwise, it can cause you to make some rather myopic decisions. So for me, data informed is much more about, you're getting all this sales data in that says 70% of our sales are from Amazon. A data-driven approach might say, all right, we're going to put 70% of our resources and effort towards maximizing sales on Amazon. And data-informed says, okay, well, we know Amazon is a transactional point for a lot of people. It's not necessarily the point of discovery. Sites that include links to Amazon, social links, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of reasons people go to buy a book on Amazon. And half of them have nothing to do with Amazon helping them discover that book. So if you decide to shift 70% of your resources towards, say Amazon advertising, and you're only prioritizing metadata on Amazon, you potentially are losing all of the other touch points that drove those sales to Amazon. And suddenly your Amazon percentage may stay at 70%, but your overall sales may drop. And that, to me, is one of the key differences between where data-driven versus data-informed. That's where you really draw a line.
Yeah, so it's basically garbage in, garbage out, too, because the amount of data you have and the type of data you're pulling in, if you're only looking at a subset of real information, then you're only going to have enough information to make a very narrow choice. But when it comes down to the data the publishers receive, a lot of times they don't get enough data to really be able to be data informed in the first place. And so you feel like you have to be data driven and just make decisions based on what you've got. So besides that problem of being a little bit too myopic, are there other problems that you see with being data driven? Have you seen examples of this or challenges that you think are kind of endemic to the way publishers go to the data driven angle?
Yeah, I think if you look at how the publishing industry itself has kind of evolved over the past 10 to 20 years, I remember at the beginning of Digital Book World, one of the big issues that was being debated was, were publishers, should publishers publish fewer but better books? Mm-hmm. And that was fundamentally a critique of the bestseller model. Like, throw as many books out there because you don't know which one's going to be the bestseller, usually. So you've got to publish a whole bunch because the big corporate publishing model really relies on a couple of big hits to subsidize that entire operation. So Barack Obama's book last year, that was PRH's big book for the year. It pays people's bonuses. I remember years back when, E.L. James with the Shades of Gray, when they picked that up from self-publishing, that became the title that got everybody their bonuses at the end of the year. At I guess they were Penguin or Random House. I forget. That might be before they became PRH. But so that scale model of chasing bestsellers is kind of a good example of data driven gone wrong. The critiques ever since have been, well, if you're only chasing bestsellers and bestsellers are reinforced by a system that has kind of prioritized a certain type of book and audience, you end up narrowing your prospects. And so that data-driven approach means you're chasing a smaller audience for a smaller subset of books. The mid-list over the past 10 years has not disappeared. At the big five, it's definitely kind of faded and pushed out into the smaller and mid-sized publishers. That's kind of the opportunity they get to play in. But outside of Amazon, the priorities are given to these bigger books. So bookstores, even library budgets, are heavily weighted towards the big bestsellers. All of this to me is kind of that outcome of being so data-driven that, oh, this is what's the bestseller. All our comps are going to be compared to this. And we're missing the opportunity to identify other books, other audiences that may not be bestsellers, but not every book is. If every book was a bestseller, there'd be no bestsellers, you know, the Incredibles. If everybody is special, no one's special kind of thing. So that being too data driven can lead you down that path of, oh, bestsellers are the only thing that matter, but predicting a bestseller is really difficult. So you end up in this scenario of most of your on the publishing side, most of your investment and marketing resources go towards this particular segment of books, and these other audiences and segments and categories don't get as much attention. Creates an opportunity for other publishers, though. So they're the good side of being too data driven is that's a weakness for your competitors that if you're data informed, you can take advantage of.
Yeah, and this ties also into the backlist sales. You know, but I talked about that a couple of episodes ago in the Moneyball episode. The idea being that, you know, backlist sales are increasing. They're 67% now of total sales. If you don't have a midlist, how are you going to have, you know, a solid range of backlist titles that people will just kind of slowly catch on to and want to buy and kind of discover over time? If everything's big blockbusters, then sure, those are backlist as well at some point. But there's a benefit to having a pretty broad back a midlist, so you have more of that content that people will catch and say, "Oh, that's an interesting title. I didn't hear about this book when it came out 3 years ago. Let me go pick up a copy." And I think that's an important aspect of this whole data-driven versus data-informed approach too.
Yeah, I think, you know, so here's an interesting example. When I was running Panorama Project, we did this partnership with Washington Post to do an analysis of, you know, last summer there was the big burst in interest in social justice, anti-racist titles. And so we did a version of this Panorama Picks initiative that we had that tend to look at recent titles that kind of were in demand at libraries but weren't like top of the bestseller list titles. So we tweaked that to look at a handful of relevant BISACs to there is no, you know, anti-racist BISAC. So we had to, you know, do be a little creative by looking at some of the books that were most often recommended. White Fragility, blanking on the names of some of them. But there were like five or six that was on everybody's list. So we took those books, looked at their BISAC codes, and then we put no date parameter on recency to look at what was being surfaced in libraries in those categories. The range of books, if I remember correctly, was more than 20 years. Only two of them had been published in the past year. So you talk about backlist and a category that honestly, let's be real, no publisher was taking seriously before last summer. It was an occasional thing. The vast majority of that backlist was 5 years or older. And there were at least two of them where the same title appeared twice, its original edition and a 10-year updated edition. So that was an interesting example of during the pandemic when backlist grew even more. And frontlist, a lot of books got pushed out. Marketing, you know, became a very different challenge for a lot of publishers. And yet 2020 book sales increased. So that to me says a lot about if you're mining your backlist and really being data informed and understanding what is driving those backlist sales, A, your frontlist should be a lot better because you're identifying where the areas of interest are. And the fact that it took last, the event, various events of last summer to really blow that category up is an interesting, you can look at that as one way of, well, look what it took to drive the interest in those books. Or you could do the flip side. Well, maybe if you were more focused on that category, things wouldn't have gotten to that point. Why wait for things to blow up to identify an important category that you can contribute to? So that to me is it partly comes back to mission as well. If your mission is purely, capitalism and commercial hit the bestseller list, like several best big fives are, then you're going to have a different approach to data. If your mission is something else, whether it's more niche oriented, vertical, serving particular communities, really owning a particular category, I think that's where you where the data informed approach becomes a lot more relevant and robust.
And that's where a very large number of midsize and smaller publishers fit, right? They have a mission-driven approach to whatever kind of topics they feel are important, the books they want to publish. And so there's a real benefit in having that and even considering looking for where the trends will be a couple of years down the road in that niche so that you can focus in on publishing the right kinds of topics that will eventually become those, those mid-list bestsellers or the mid-list backlist that really works for generating more sales in the future and kind of giving you a good baseline.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's think about, I want to talk about some practicalities, right? I mean, we're talking about these big ideas all the time, but let's talk about practicalities. What kinds of data do you think that publishers should be utilizing? What do you have any practical advice for publishers who really don't know where to get started on becoming more data informed?
So, I came from the magazine world initially, and that informs a lot of my own perspective on data and how to use it. My first job was in the circulation department, old school direct marketing, excuse me, managing lists and spreadsheets, doing A/B testing, all the stuff that on the digital marketing side is, treated as innovative and, cutting edge kind of thing, ways to really drive sales. That's what we did in the old days in subscription marketing. It just wasn't as sexy. So a lot of the practicalities to me come from the magazine world has always had a direct connection to its readership. It didn't have the B2B relationship that book publishing has, where the wholesalers and the booksellers and the libraries, those are really traditionally have been publishers' customers. And that to me is part of where the data-driven flaw comes in. If, we know all about book deserts in this country, huge communities that don't have a single bookstore. When I lived in the Bronx, the Barnes and Noble out by Co-op City was the Bronx's main bookstore. And the Bronx, I think, is 1.5 million people, one Barnes and Noble. And that closed eventually. So when you talk about your data coming from secondary sources, you're in a different position. So when I think about practicalities, one of the first things I look at is, if you've got a clear vertical that you serve, you've got opportunities to capture data beyond just the sales data that gets fed to you from your partners. And there are publishers who have done this. Tor.com remains one of the best examples of a big five publisher really rethinking the process and figuring out how to go to direct consumer in a way that wasn't about e-commerce. I know in the beginning, e-commerce was going to be a part of that, but they couldn't get other publishers to give them share information about their other imprints. So they kind of went on their own and built an audience around tour titles. And ultimately, self-publishing became a part of that niche as well. And I think over time, other publishers started playing nicely with tor.com. But that's a good example of, hey, we can just be the sci-fi imprint that gets our information from Barnes and Noble and Amazon and continues to publish, the traditional sci-fi and fantasy that we've all come to expect. Or we can expand our awareness of this audience by, one of the biggest changes on everybody talks about, oh, online disrupted advertising and blah, 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 blah. What online did that gets undervalued is there is a community for everything on the internet.
Yep.
you can get a pretty clear sense of how big it is and how engaged they are. And you can build a business model around that if you can develop the right content or services. You know, it's not just about books for those communities, but it starts with really understanding those communities. And to do that, you got to be a part of them. So you can't just go buy, you know, Reddit's mailing list or do an ad buy on Reddit and think you're engaging with the community. You're just, you know, shifting traditional marketing approaches to the internet. So for me, the most practical thing is, first and foremost, you know, take that magazine model of direct engagement with readers and find a way to fit that into whatever your particular mission and vertical fits. You know, the caveat to that is if you don't have a vertical, if you're just a general publisher, that's a choice. And then you're kind of a lot more reliant on being data driven. You're kind of chasing trends. You don't have maybe a defined audience. That's a tougher world to play in. It's a valid world. There's plenty of publishers who do it. But that, I think, is where you kind of almost have no choice but to be data driven, and your expectations should be different.
Yeah, and those publishers in that situation actually might benefit from having a black ops group, kind of, you know, a Skunk Works kind of group that can focus in on some verticals that they already have a good solid position in. That, you know, maybe they are a very general publisher. That doesn't mean they have to run a completely, you know, across the board like a big publisher would or like a general publisher would. Hey, take some time and take some energy and go pursue one of those verticals that you already have some good writers and some good authors in, and see if that can flesh out into something that's more focused and can give you a little bit more of that direct to consumer basis. I agree with you 100%. I think direct to consumer is going to be the future of publishing. If you look back in history, you know, publishers have not had a direct connection to their consumers almost at all, right? It's completely B2B. It's all about that. It's all about the relationship with the distributors and maybe the retailers and the wholesalers, but there's very little connection. I've seen a lot of publishers in the last year and a half, 2 years, as a result of the pandemic and shutdowns of bookstores. They're having to figure out how they can go more direct to consumer and how they can build those verticals and build those connections. So I love that idea, the connection to the magazine market. I think, you know, if you look at, you know, the way magazines do direct to consumer is very different than what you see in even in direct to consumer in the publishing world, in the book publishing world still. And I think there's a lot to learn there.
Yeah, one of my favorite examples is I use them a lot, Microcosm Publishing. They are out of the Pacific Northwest. I think they're based in Portland. They are a clearly mission-driven traditional publisher. They don't, you know, they don't do magazines or anything like that, but their entire persona is built around, you know, they started out with zines. You can't get more like mission and audience driven than that. They've got a really distinct voice. They've got a strong e-commerce presence to the point where they very reluctantly sell through Amazon. They don't rely on Ingram. They do their own distribution, and they even distribute other small and mid-sized publishers. But if you dig around their website, if you order a book from them and see how they operate, they are taking, in some ways, there's magazine publishers that could learn from them, but they are taking kind of the best of the internet from a beginning that was not internet oriented. They were old school, hitting music festivals, selling their zines physically. They're, to me, one of the best examples of what a traditional publisher operation can look like without going so far as like a tor.com, where you build out the equivalent of a magazine media operation on the internet. That, to me, is like a good benchmark for, all right, we don't want to get into that bigger audience. Then you got to focus on having a real identity and a real personality and figure it out that way. And once you reach those audiences, e-commerce becomes a lot easier because they're going to come to you to buy the things they're looking for. So that they're a good example I use for people to who say, well, you know, we're just a book publisher. It's like, okay, you don't have to go full on in the magazine approach. Here's a good example of the way to do it.
So focus on your audience. Start with that idea of figuring out who your audience is. That obviously is a pretty straightforward, practical point for publishers. Any other practical advice you can give to a publisher who's really trying to figure this stuff out? Maybe they can see what their vertical might be. How do they reach into that vertical more effectively?
So, one of the other differences between books and magazines generally is that in books, the authors are the brands. It's there are imprints who are recognizable brands, Tor, Microcosm. Those brands mean something to those communities, usually because the people who founded and built them were part of those communities. It's rare that a brand is just created out of scratch and becomes part of the community. So, in book publishing, so much of the industry is behind the scenes. They're completely reliant on the authors to be the brands. And that can work as long as you're bringing some other important things to the table. And so if you're building that audience, what are you giving that audience besides just access to these books? It's kind of a variation. I like to flip the script on publishers, and it's like, all right, a lot of you publishers, when I was running Writer's Digest, platform continues to be like one of the biggest issues, concerns, opportunities for both aspiring and mid-career authors. And you constantly hear, oh, you're going to need a platform if you want to get that traditional book deal. I've flipped that and said, okay, authors, publishers are asking you for your platform. Here's some things you need to evaluate about the publisher's platform. Like flip the script on them and say, hey, well, here's what I've got. What do you have? What does your email list look like? What is your relationship with libraries, if libraries are an important part of your personal mission? So there's a, even as a B2B operation, you can look at some publishers and see, oh, these guys have a genuine relationship with these intermediaries. They're not just a distribution channel. So the difference between, say, Penguin Random House's library marketing efforts and almost any other publishers, really, they're kind of one of the better ones. You can see that stuff right on their website, right in their promotional efforts. So I think when you think about from a small and mid-sized publisher angle, look at ways you can collaborate. I feel like outside of the big five and at some key publishers, the sense of competition is a little different. There's a lot more willingness to collaborate. One of my favorite conferences was Pub West. I went 2 years ago, right before the pandemic. So that was last year. Jeez. I had not seen since the first year of Digital Book World the kind of willingness to kind of collaborate, share insights, really, the side conversations that would happen where people would get into deeper discussions about how they're doing things, finding that network in the industry itself. So there's one thing about finding your audience, it's also finding industry partners who are in a similar situation, whether they're in the same niche or not. I found the small and mid-sized publishers are a lot more willing to work together and share insights and resources to kind of overcome some of these challenges, where the big five has obvious obstacles there. PRH and Macmillan aren't necessarily going to collaborate on any major initiatives, but mid-sized publisher X and Y absolutely could. So I think that's another practical area. Find the industry conference, whether it's Pub West, if you're smaller and it's IBPA. Really take advantage of those resources because there you can make connections to with other publishers who are in a similar situation, and you may find some interesting opportunities to collaborate. Literally, like Microcosm has done a good job of periodically of pulling together Pacific Northwest publishers on marketing initiatives that they had the platform to help scale, but it wasn't just about selling their own books. They were able to help five or six others, not all of whom were necessarily their distribution clients. So those opportunities exist.
That's great. That's awesome. Well, we're short on time, so we're going to go and close it out here. But Gee, I really appreciate your insights on this. I think I hope that everyone walks away with with better ideas and kind of some practical advice that they can run with. And this is an important area. We talk about data a lot in publishing. I talk about data all the time. It's kind of my thing. But the we've got to be careful about being so focused on being driven by the data that we don't understand kind of what the data is telling us, and even understand where the data is coming from to be able to be better informed by it. So I think that's really great, and I appreciate you coming on the show to talk about it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Enjoy it, and looking forward to future episodes.
So that's it for this episode of the Book Smarts podcast. If you'd like what you heard, then please leave a review or rating on your podcast app. If you have a topic suggestion or feedback about the show, you can email me at joshua@firebrandtech.com. And thanks for joining us and for getting smarter about your books.